Good morning, everyone. The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Welcome, everyone. We have our quorum is present, and we have the first order of business is approval of the minutes of January 17th. Is there a
motion to approve, please?
All right. Representative Bierman moves approval of the minutes. We're quick. Of January 17th, is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of January 17th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay. The first bill on the agenda today is House Bill 289. There's Representative Olson. Okay. So because Representative Olson is not on the committee, the chair will move that House Bill 289 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future committee bill. And just so members are aware, that doesn't mean we won't pick it up and move it out at a future time. We don't have a fiscal note on it yet, so we are keeping it here for the time being. And there is an author's amendment, and so the chair will move the author's amendment. And let's see, what is the number on the author's amendment? That would be the A1 amendment. So the chair will move the A1 amendment, and to get the bill in the order in which the author would like to have it discussed. So any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Olson, do you need to describe it at all? I think it's pretty straightforward. All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. So, Representative Olson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for hearing House File 289. So the Positive Pregnancy Support Act reforms the state's positive alternatives to abortion program to address misleading and coercive practices and ensure that state dollars are available to grantees who meet the program's long-stated goal of supports for pregnant people and new parents. The bill eliminates language that requires grantees to influence or know whether pregnant people receiving services intend to carry their pregnancies to term, and to ensure that services and information delivered through the grant are given freely. It also ensures that any medical information or services provided by grantees are medically accurate and provided by appropriate professionals. Finally, it opens the program to any organization that can deliver the services required, eliminating a gag clause against organizations that have any ties to abortion providers. So I'll walk through the bill. The bill changes the title from the Positive Abortion Alternatives to Positive Pregnancies. This change is keeping in line with the long-stated goal of non-directive, non-coercive supports for pregnant and parenting people, and in keeping with the Minnesota Supreme Court Doe v. Gomez decision, which states that state law should not preference one birth outcome over another. Subdivision 1 deletes the current definition for abortion, non-directive counseling, and unborn child, and adds a definition of medically accurate, which is referenced in Subdivision 2, Section C. Subdivision 2, Paragraph A, eliminates language that requires grantees to influence or know whether pregnant people receiving services intend to carry their pregnancies to term. It adds to the list of services about which grantees must provide information. Domestic violence and mental health resources, and healthcare eligibility and enrollment assistance. Paragraph B eliminates language that condition provision of services on the intention of pregnant person to carry their pregnancy to term, and requires that any support services are provided by appropriately trained and licensed individuals. Paragraph C amends grant eligibility requirements, which extends the prohibition of charging women for services to apply regardless of gender, and it requires any information provided to be medically accurate. It eliminates a requirement to influence or condition assistance on the intention of a pregnant person to carry their pregnancy to term. It requires all services and information be provided free of charge and preconditions, and to make that clear in the signage and printed materials. It protects against inaccurate and unnecessary ultrasounds by requiring that they be provided by appropriately trained and licensed medical professionals, and that referrals for ultrasound include information on the risks on non-medical ultrasounds. It clarifies a provision related to counseling to ensure that only non-directive counseling is offered, and opens the program to new as well as returning grantees. The bill eliminates an unnecessary severability clause, eliminates the prohibition on grants to organizations that also provide abortions or in any way related to organizations that provide abortions, and eliminates a requirement to provide medically accurate information that's now redundant with paragraph C. Subdivisions 3 strengthens the protections around consent to share contact information, health information. Subdivision 4 eliminates language requiring grantees to know or influence a pregnant person's intentions regarding carrying a pregnancy to term. Subdivision 5 eliminates a reference to a now deleted section. And Subdivision 6 is deleted to remove unenforceable language related to the Supreme Court jurisdiction. And with that, Madam Chair, that is the bill, and I know there are testifiers.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Olson. And before we get to the testifiers, we've had a number of people sign up, which is great, and we didn't require sign up today, so I just want to ask if there is anyone in the audience who intends to testify on the bill but did not sign up. I just want to make sure we have enough time for everyone who wants to testify. All right, not seeing any hands go up, so I'm going to assume that the list is what we already have here. And so the first person on the list then would be Megan Peterson. And we have nine people signed up. So we still do need to keep our testimony kind of brief, but, we don't have to keep people quite as on task as we did in previous hearings, but we just would ask everyone when you come up to please be concise in your remarks. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Thank you, Chair Liebling and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify in support of HF 289, the Positive Pregnancy Support Act. My name is Megan Peterson. I'm the Executive Director of Gender Justice. Gender Justice is a legal and policy advocacy organization based here in St. Paul, and we're dedicated to advancing gender equity through the law. We believe that every pregnant person deserves support without conditions, information without bias or restrictions, and resources that meet their needs. There are many excellent organizations throughout Minnesota that offer a full range of services, resources, and reliable information to pregnant people without judgment or agenda. But under current Minnesota law, organizations have to actively discourage people from ending a pregnancy to get state funding, even when a patient has already decided to obtain an abortion. In fact, millions of taxpayer dollars are currently going to crisis pregnancy centers. These anti-abortion centers use deception and coercion to prevent people from seeking and obtaining abortion care. In 2021, Gender Justice co-released a study called Designed to Deceive, a study of the crisis pregnancy center industry in 9 states. I recommend you read the full study, and I have copies with me here today if you'd like to see it. I wanted to highlight a few key findings. Over 63% of the CPCs in Minnesota make false and biased claims and blatantly false statements about abortion, at almost double the rate of CPCs in other states in the study. Many CPCs promote abortion pill reversal, an untested medical procedure that ACOG called unethical and not based in science. 57% of state-funded CPCs provide no prenatal care referrals, and 62% provide no wellness care referrals. The Positive Pregnancy Support Act would expand the evidence-based, medically accurate care and resources available to pregnant Minnesotans and end state funding of the deceptive practices designed to impose an anti-abortion agenda on pregnant Minnesotans seeking support. I urge you to pass HF 289 today. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Next we have Linesha Karen. Welcome to the committee. If you would just state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Lanisha Karen, and I'm the executive director at Pregnancy Choices in Apple Valley, Minnesota. I'm here today to share my opposition to HF 289, which alters the Positive Alternatives Grant Program and creates not only unnecessary but careless barriers to current recipients maintaining their grant funding. I'd like to begin with a story. Anita's story, name change for confidentiality, began about 14 months ago when she came to Pregnancy Choices strongly considering an abortion. Her story included a 9-year-old, 2 5-year-old twins, and a lot of uncertainty around how she would financially provide for another child. Through support and partnership in a non-judgmental, non-coercive way, she ultimately decided to parent, but she recognized how it was possible. In the 14 months following, Anita has taken advantage of nearly every opportunity Pregnancy Choices has offered her. She completed our Baby and Me parenting program, participated in our prenatal and well-being coaching workshops, accessed our educational video library, and even committed to enrolling in a financial empowerment course to better sustain her family long-term. All these things are funded, and supported by the Positive Alternatives Grant as it currently stands. Anita is one of 643 clients that Pregnancy Choices served last year, and just 2 weeks ago, through the Greater Pregnancy Choices community, we orchestrated the repairs needed to make her car drivable after one of our mechanic partners deemed it unsafe to drive. Additionally, last year, we supported 180 moms and 42 dads through our Baby and Me and Good Father programs. Our clients watched over 770 educational videos around pregnancy and parenting. We helped 64 families ensure their baby could ride safely in a reliable car seat and 40 more with a safe crib for their baby to sleep at night, as well as safe sleep education. Furthermore, we evaluate our programs for their effectiveness annually, and the impact of our coaching programs are amazing. They're remarkable. They are even double and even triple the impact. They have the impact that is either double or triple the impact of others like it. Data collected from self-reported surveys show that on average, our clients became significantly more confident, they became less stressed, and showed significant satisfaction with their ability to set and achieve goals. If this bill passes and we must begin to provide pregnancy termination referrals, Anita and others like her will pay that price. This is unnecessary and will devalue our approach. If the current recipients of this grant lose funding because we choose not to refer for abortions, who will step in the gaps that we are collectively filling? The support we provide goes far beyond the pregnancy decision, as evidenced by Anita's story alone. Again, I ask, who will take our place? Thank you for hearing my testimony today. I hope you vote no on this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. And before I, the next testifier will be Paulina Briggs. And while Paulina Briggs is coming up, I would just say for some reason the mics are a little awkward in this room. So if the testifiers could pull the mic kind of close to your mouth and speak really closely into it, it would be helpful. So thank you. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Paulina Briggs. On behalf of We Health Clinic, I come to you today in support of the Positive Pregnancies Bill, HF 289. We Health Clinic is an independent, nonprofit clinic in Duluth that has been in operation for over 40 years. At our clinic, we provide sexual and reproductive health care, including abortions. Our mission is to provide, advance, and advocate for evidence-based care for all. We strive to support our patients in making informed reproductive health decisions. We Health Clinic is the only abortion clinic for hundreds of miles in any direction, one of only 9 abortion clinics in the state. So-called crisis pregnancy centers, or CPCs, outnumber abortion clinics in Minnesota 11-1. There are 3 CPCs in the Duluth Superior area. None of them are medically licensed. We regularly hear from our patients about the coercive and deceptive tactics CPCs use to confuse patients and dissuade them from seeking an abortion. Some of these tactics include intentionally vague and misleading advertisement of their pregnancy and abortion-related services, failing to inform a person seeking an abortion that they are not an abortion clinic. When our patients accidentally go into a CPC instead of our clinic, the staff does not tell patients that they are in the wrong place. Instead, they pretend like this patient has an appointment, hands them paperwork to fill out with their private health information, and ushers them into an ultrasound room. The resulting ultrasounds are not interpreted by a licensed medical professional and are often inaccurate. Patients have been told they are further along in their pregnancy than they actually are, misleading the patient to believe they are too far along for an abortion. Other times, patients are told they are early in their pregnancy and are reassured they have plenty of time to think over the decision to have an abortion. But by the time they come to us, they are past our gestational limit for an abortion. Alarmingly, we have even seen instances of CPC ultrasounds which miss important pregnancy anomalies, putting a pregnant person's health at risk. Patients who go to CPCs are told exaggerated, medically inaccurate information about the risks and complications of abortions, a medical procedure which is 19 times safer than childbirth. The coercion doesn't stop once a patient has left the CPC. They use contact information collected upon intake to continue calling patients for weeks afterwards. Years ago, a patient brought in a brochure from a CPC. One excerpt from that brochure read, "Pregnant women experience a surge of hormones which interferes with their ability to make important life decisions." That misguided and medically inaccurate quote sums up the disregard CPCs have for pregnant people's dignity and bodily autonomy. The Duluth recipient of the current Positive Alternatives grant aligns themselves with these CPCs, listing them on their resource list. Among the other so-called resources listed are various anti-choice organizations, including the group of anti-choice protesters who gather outside our clinic each week, blocking patients' entry into the building, trespassing onto our property, and yelling anti-abortion sentiments at the patients entering our clinic. CPCs and their partner organizations who receive Positive Alternatives grant funding as it is currently written, weaponize compassion and subvert evidence-based medical care. This bill works to provide Minnesotans facing decisions surrounding a pregnancy with what they deserve, reliable, unbiased, and medically accurate information and resources for all pregnancy outcomes. I hope that you vote in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Jill King. And following Jill King will be Jill Collins, so if you could be ready. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jill King, and I'm the executive director of a pregnancy resource center in Forest Lake, Minnesota. We are currently recipients of the Positive Alternatives grant, and the grant is a tremendous help to our center. It currently is 40% of our budget. I am here to oppose the changes being proposed to the Positive Alternatives Program through HF 289, and I encourage you to vote no. Our center has been open and serving pregnant and parenting women and families since 1982. We provide support to all women and families who seek it from us. In the last 5 years alone, given we live in a small town, we have helped over 725 women and families with over 4,700 visits to our center. Of those 725, over 50% of them came to us because they wanted an alternative to abortion. We are able to provide them with the support they needed to become parents. We do this through educational programming where they can come and learn how to prepare for their baby and how to care for their child after birth. Our care does not stop with one visit. We walk alongside a woman or family for as long as they need us. We do not persuade a woman to make one choice over another. We simply let her know that there's support for her if she wants to carry this pregnancy to term. The Positive Alternative grant has allowed us to grow and expand in ways that we never would have been able to. We were able to move to a location that is easily accessible to everyone in our community, especially low-income families. We've been able to hire more staff and to meet the needs of the women we see and have been able to expand our services to meet the ever-changing needs of our community. Some of our services include prenatal and parenting education classes, material support for things like formula, car seats, diapers, baby clothing, infant equipment, referrals to professionals for mental health care, prenatal care, and other medical care. The Positive Alternatives grant was enacted to provide women with another option. When looking at this bill, specifically on lines 4.11 and 4.12, which state the recipients of the grant are to provide referrals for many things, including terminating pregnancy, if we are forced to provide referrals for abortion, we will no longer be able to receive this grant. I feel that there should be funding available for all options, not just those that provide or refer for abortions. Organizations that do so already receive funding on both the state and federal levels. Pregnancy centers provide valuable services to the communities where they're located, and losing this grant will greatly impact the services we provide, which in turn will impact the families in our community. A woman who wants an abortion does not need a referral from us. She already knows where to go. If she comes to us, She's looking for a different option. Thank you for your time, and I urge you to vote no on HF 289. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Jill Collins, followed by Jennifer Meyer. Welcome to the committee, and when you get settled there, if you would just state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Jill Collins from Columbia Heights, and I am here as a concerned abortion patient advocate representing Robbinsdale Clinic PA, as well as a concerned reproductive health educator. I support House File 289 because it will eliminate positive abortion alternatives funding crisis pregnancy centers or CPCs. Minnesota taxpayer money should not be used to harm vulnerable people and communities. During my time as a graduate student, I worked on several projects that investigated crisis pregnancy centers. A report from the Alliance was released February 1st of 2022, defining crisis pregnancy centers, or CPCs, as anti-abortion organizations that seek to reach low-income people facing unintended pregnancies to prevent them from accessing abortion and contraception. There is clear evidence that encouraging people to carry unplanned or unwanted pregnancies can be harmful. And this is exactly what CPCs are set up to do. And Minnesotans pay for this through positive abortion alternatives funding. This is unethical. CPCs are not regulated because they are not considered actual medical clinics, which opens the door for misinformation and disinformation on abortion procedures and prenatal care. Of the 90 CPCs in our state, nearly 57 of them were found to recklessly provide incorrect medical information. CPCs do not have to follow HIPAA laws. Anyone visiting a CPC is at risk of having their information shared or sold without their permission. I have seen this firsthand while reading Google reviews of the CPC across the street from my workplace. That's not their only disturbing behavior. My workplace is called Robbinsdale Clinic PA, while the CPC across the street is called Robbinsdale Women's Center. This is not a coincidence. This tactic is used to confuse our patients on where they should be going for their appointment. Several patients have told me they have incorrectly gone to Robbinsdale Women's Center first before coming to our clinic, thinking they were coming to see non-judgmental staff in their search for abortion care. With each negative Google review of Robbinsdale Women's Center, a staff person or volunteer responds with whether or not they have a record of that individual visiting their clinic. And with each positive review, a staff person or volunteer responds with acknowledging that care was received there by that individual. Privacy is clearly not a priority in these kinds of fake clinics. CPCs do not exist to provide care or support. 86 of the 90 CPCs in Minnesota do not offer prenatal care. Over half do not refer for prenatal care services. They are not assisting pregnant people in getting actual health care. This has had grave impacts on Minnesota's maternal mortality rate. We're in a crisis and we're misusing taxpayer dollars. The golden rule of health care is to do no harm. And CPCs pose as clinics, which harms people who are walking in their doors. We're all paying for that to happen, and that makes me feel guilty. Minnesotans deserve better. I want to reiterate how safe abortion is and how important equitable access to prenatal care is to ensure that we keep Minnesotans accurately informed of their pregnancy options. Encouraging people to carry unwanted or unplanned pregnancies while not referring for prenatal care can be harmful. Support pregnant Minnesotans. Defund crisis pregnancy centers by passing House File 289. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Jennifer Meyer, and then we have Dr. Anna Hing, if you would be ready to come up. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, and hello, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Meyer. I'm the Executive Director of Options for Women East, which is a pregnancy medical clinic located on the east side of St. Paul, and we've been serving women for 33 years. I'm here today to share that rewriting the requirements for the Positive Alternative Grant Program will create harm for the women and families that we serve. We provide pregnancy services for women who are uninsured, including testing, ultrasounds, education, material assistance, and a full prenatal program, including delivering postpartum care. All of our services are at no cost. Did you know that if you do not have insurance when you find out you're pregnant, you cannot book an appointment with your primary care physician? No one will see you for your pregnancy without insurance. These women continue their pregnancy without seeing a doctor, without having necessary testing and labs, without ultrasounds, without mental health screenings, without lactation services, without home visits, and without the support of a trained and licensed medical team that will support them through their entire pregnancy journey. This is a public health crisis. Oh, and yes, we provide all of those services and more to anyone who walks through our door. This bill of HF 289 is rewriting the Positive Alternative Grant Program to force current grantees to go against their personal health beliefs and values. We uphold the dignity of human life, all life, by forcing us to provide referrals for pregnancy termination, abortion, in lines 4.9 through 4.12 of this bill. That is in direct opposition of our core values. We offer medically accurate information on all pregnancy options, but our scope of services is to fill a void that no one else is filling, providing care for those women and families who are uninsured and make the choice to continue their pregnancy. By not complying with this directive, we would be ineligible to receive grant funds. This would cut our prenatal program and eliminate many services stated above for women and families that we serve. To date, we've had over 250 women enter our prenatal program, and over 120 babies have been delivered thanks in part to the funds from this grant. I urge you to vote no on this bill, and I thank you for listening to me today.
Thank you for your testimony. And just, members, we will hold questions until the end, but we may ask some of the testifiers to come back. Okay, Dr. Anna Hing, and then followed by Devorah Herman-Judah. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Senator Liebling and members of the House Financial Committee. My name is Dr. Anna Hing, and I'm currently serving as a public health researcher at the Center for Anti-Racism Research for Health Equity at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. One of our center's key areas of research is Black and Indigenous reproductive health. This is a critical topic as Minnesota is facing a maternal health crisis. Black birthing people are 2 times more likely to die from pregnancy complications than their white counterparts, and Indigenous birthing people are 4 times more likely to die. Racism, not race, is the cause of this inequity, and racism is a public health crisis that is that we can intervene upon. At the center, we don't just document problems, but we identify data-driven solutions to work towards equity. For example, in partnership with local Black-owned and operated Roots Community Birthing Center, we have shown that culturally and relationally centered care improves health outcomes for Black birthing people and their babies. The positive health outcomes we see at Roots are based on medical professionals providing empowering, honest, and anti-racist care. To be absolutely clear, the care Black pregnant people receive at Roots is a direct contrast to what has been documented at crisis pregnancy centers, which have been shown to use deception, provide unscientific misinformation, and delay actual medical care. Within the center's team, my area of expertise is how policy, specifically state policy, impacts population health for Black communities. When legislators build policy centered on dignity, autonomy, and the fundamental worth of Black, Indigenous, and racialized birthing people, it makes the entire community healthier. That is why, in my expert opinion, supported by a growing body of research at the center and beyond, that the Positive Pregnancy Support Act, HF 289, will be beneficial for Minnesotan birthing people, especially our Black and Indigenous birthing people. Thank you for your time. I would be happy to provide further evidence and expertise on this important bill in the future.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Devorah Herman-Judah, and then followed by Abina Abraham. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Devorah Herman-Judah. I am a registered nurse and a women's health nurse practitioner. Before my nursing career, I was a doula and midwife. I love all things related to childbearing, which is why I'm asking you to pass the Positive Pregnancy Support Act. The Positive Pregnancy Support Act matters to me because I know that patients thrive with doulas, childbirth education, lactation support, and parenting classes. Last year, I was employed by 2 different adolescent reproductive health clinics in the Twin Cities. The 2 clinics serve identical populations with comparable neighborhood demographics, but only one was a grantee of Positive Alternatives to Abortion Act funding. When I worked at the grantee clinic, I had to alter my clinical practice. I could not refer my patients for abortion care. I could connect them to prenatal care or give them the names of adoption agencies, but not talk them through the judicial bypass process or help them schedule an abortion. At the non-grantee clinic, I could talk my patients through all pregnancy options and refer them for whatever services they need. The Positive Alternatives to Abortion Act funds many of the services my patients need, but the Positive Pregnancy Support Act could fund these services at many more clinics. Clinics doing great work in their communities. Clinics expanding access to healthcare across populations. Clinics looking for ways to improve health outcomes for pregnant people, especially pregnant people of color. Clinics doing outreach on streets and in shelters, and clinics that refer people for all pregnancy options, including abortion. Please pass the Positive Pregnancy Support Act so that clinics throughout Minnesota can increase and expand support services for their pregnant and parenting patients, regardless of whether those patients need or want abortions. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your testimony. And then we have Abina Abraham. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Liebling and committee members, thank you for having me here today. My name is Abina Abraham, and I am one of the co-directors of the Black Immigrant Collective and campaign director at Unrestrict Minnesota, and I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 289. Black Immigrant Collective is a Black-led immigrant justice organization that works at the intersection of Blackness and immigration. And although our organization isn't a reproductive justice organization, our work in the community demands that we support House File 289. Reports from the Minnesota Department of Health and other research have shown that negative maternal health outcomes amongst our BIPOC communities are at an all-time high in our state. For example, last year, a report from the Minnesota Department of Health found that Black Minnesotans represent 13% of the birthing population, but made up for 23% of pregnancy-associated deaths. While Indigenous Minnesotans represent 2% of the birthing population, they represent 8% of pregnancy-associated deaths. This bill would help address some of the disparities in mental health outcomes, including expanding the information, services, and resources available to pregnant people and new parents through state-funded pregnancy support programs without conditions and regardless of their plans for their pregnancies or their pregnancy outcomes, and requiring all state-funded services offered to pregnant people in Minnesota to be medically accurate and delivered by an appropriate professional. Most importantly, this bill will give the trusted organizations rooted in community that are cut out of the program by the gag order and by the program requirement that organizations had an alternatives to abortion program in place since 2011, the ability to operate in our community. Increasing the support network of providers for birthing people in our state and requiring the same level of professionalism and scientific grounding for state-funded pregnancy services as for other medical services are a critical first step to addressing Minnesota's racial disparities in maternal health outcomes. House File 289 will help ensure that all Minnesotans, regardless of their race, income, area of residence, have the chance to give birth safely, raise healthy families, and live into the full promise of their futures. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. So that concludes the list of testifiers that we had. Let me just ask again if there's anyone in the audience who would like to testify on the bill. All right. Not seeing anyone, so we will go to member discussion on the list. I have Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the things I thought I heard from one of the testifiers is that there are clinics out there that have got doctors that will not provide OVP coverage if the patient does not have insurance. I can say I know that's not true. Mm-hmm. I know of clinics on the east side of St. Paul that do have take patients in with OBYG doctors if the people have no insurance and they can write it off as charity care. So I do know that does occur.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fisher. And I could look to House Research. Probably our federally qualified health centers are in that category as well. So I think we do have, in fact, I don't know if Mr. Chun or who exactly could confirm that, but I assume that they do take people who are uninsured. That's kind of part of their mission, in fact. Right? Does Mr. Chun, did you want to say any? Is that, in fact, the case?
Madam Chair, I would just say that I think they are required to accept people of low income, and they would charge them on a sliding scale.
Right. All right. Thank you for that. Okay, other member discussion. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure who might be able to answer this, but the way that the grant operates now, how is that funded? Is it forecasted? Is there a formula for how much money is put in, or is that a direct appropriation?
Mr. Harney, is that yours?
Yeah. Chair Liebling, Representative Schumacher, I believe it is a direct appropriation. I can confirm with you right now and let you know if that's not the case.
Yeah, and my recollection, too, is that it's an ongoing appropriation, and I'm not sure exactly what the formula is to divide it among the clinics, but it is an ongoing appropriation. Representative,
follow-up?
Yeah, Representative Schumacher. Thank
you. Do we know about how much that is currently? And then you said before that we're waiting for a fiscal note on this. Are we anticipating, if it's a direct appropriation, that there will be an actual fiscal note, or is this really just kind of a policy bill at the moment?
Well, so, Mr. Harney, don't you?
Yeah, Chair Liebling, Representative Schumacher, the fiscal note would show the impact to the bill as drafted. It wouldn't affect the underlying base appropriation for it. It would show the cost to changing the grant administration. So that's a little bit of the nuance here. I am unsure as to the base amount itself that we're talking about here, but I'm happy to provide that to you and the committee once I can figure that out.
That would be great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schumacher. And I would just say that I think we will be looking at the amount as part of our budgeting process, because this whole issue, I would say, of making sure that pregnancies are supported and that people – I think we want to do a lot better in this state, frankly, to make sure that pregnancies are healthy, that we reduce those disparities that we've been hearing about, and that we really do support parents and make it more possible and more, you know, that when people decide to have a family, that they feel supported by the community. I think that's really important to all of us. So that is kind of part of our thinking as we go forward into the budgeting process. Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. To the author, Representative Olson, can you provide an example of the providers that would be eligible under this, if this would get passed, this proposal would get passed, but that is ineligible with our current law?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Backer. So just to be clear, you know, we're changing eligibility, and as we're hearing from testifiers, is if current grantees are willing to meet the criteria that we have in this bill, they would still be eligible to pursue these funds. It would open it up for other providers, I believe, like the Wee Clinic in Duluth, that currently is not eligible for these funds but could be eligible if meeting these criteria and applying for this grant.
Representative Backer?
Okay, thank you. So,
and Representative Backer, you might need to pull the mic.
You know what? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. But now you can hear me. I have a loud voice as it is.
I could hear you, but I don't know if the people online could hear you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's, you know, Representative Olson, that's concerning to me because I had the opportunity to visit one of these centers in my district in Fergus Falls, and I was quite impressed in how they help individuals and being so fair. You know, I'm troubled with some of the testifiers that we heard today. Basically grouping some of these centers as it seemed to be, and I apologize if that's not the case, but it seemed to me that trying to group that there's a pattern of not giving all the information. The ones that I've had the opportunity to visit with, they do everything that they can to help these people. And I said last week, we as a state of Minnesota need to do more about compassion. That's one of the reasons I serve as a volunteer for our ambulance service. And these centers that I have met, crisis pregnancy centers, have a lot of compassion. So, and this bill really limits their ability to give them a full scope. That's my concern, Representative Olson, and thank you.
I don't know if you want to respond, Representative Olson. We have several other members on the list. I'll let you have the last word, of course. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Olson, I have to say, I think we have officially hit like bizarro world on this issue. You know, I get, obviously we will be hearing on the floor today, House File 1, we heard House File 91. I get that there is an element in this room, in this legislature, who wants abortion at any cost for any reason. But today we are seeing we also don't want people to consider any other alternative. Like, what in the world
Representative
is this
Brindley,
bill about?
Representative New Brindley, there is no clapping in the room. I'm sorry, you will have to leave if you can't control yourselves. I would just ask you, Representative New Brindley, to refrain from impugning motives. You're doing that a lot. Please continue.
I will do my best, Madam Chair. However, I would suggest that there were a lot of motives impugned through the testifiers, calling people liars, calling people anti-choice. Well, here we're anti-life. We don't want life under any circumstances, apparently.
As
Representative Backer asked and got the answers, this opens up the grants for additional providers. It very clearly and purposefully eliminates opportunities for current providers. That is the intention of this bill, and it's so absurd. I mean, as I go through the language, even things like on lines 3.19 to 3.21, as that they can't require ultrasound, counseling, media, participate in any activities prior to or as a condition of receiving information. I want to thank our pregnancy resource folks in the room. Thank you for what you do. And thank you for saying, hey, come and participate in this parenting class. And when you do so, we're going to help you. And let's be honest, you help them anyway. But you incentivize these women, these families, to learn how to do it better. You provide financial literacy. You provide parenting classes. You provide formula. You provide diapers. You provide car seats. This is an incredibly valuable service in this state. And the purpose of this bill is to eliminate these programs, plain and simple. I have never seen such a political issue come through the House of Representatives. It is not enough to say that abortion is okay for any reason at any point. What we are saying through this bill is it is not okay to say that there might be another way. And for your family, you might not want to have an abortion, and we're here to support you in that choice. That's what we're doing here, folks. Like, it is bizarro world.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question. This language that's being primarily repealed appeared to focus on alternatives for abortion, for pregnancy options. Are there other state programs like this that focus on pregnancies going to term? That's my first question. Does anybody know that? That would promote other programs that would promote full-term pregnancy.
Maybe
wraparound
I could.
Wraparound services for single moms, low income.
Yeah.
Really specific. Are there other specific programs that promote full-term abortion or full-term pregnancy? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, let me see if House Research can answer that question. Representative Nadeau, Ms. Clarkvist.
Madam Chair and Representative Nadeau, I don't know specifically, but the Health Department is here and they might be able to provide further information.
That would be great.
Welcome to the committee. If you would state your name and tell us your position, and then go ahead and if you heard the question or do you need it repeat. Anyway, please introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you. Noya Woodrich. I'm the Division Director for Child and Family Health, Minnesota Department of Health. We also house family home visiting in my division, and that is another program and service that we would have available that would help support pregnant women.
Yeah, thank you for that. And are there other, so I think, well, Representative Nadeau, does that answer your question?
I guess it does. I don't know the extent of what that is. Does it include education and outreach and providing, educational services and counseling services and prenatal care and diapers and all these things that go along with what it appeared that this old act used to contain?
To the test. I'm sorry, I didn't catch. Tell me your name again. I'm sorry.
Noya, N-O-Y-A, Woodridge.
Woodridge. All right. Please, if you can.
All right. Yes, family home visiting is a program where we fund local public health, tribes, and nonprofit partners to do home visiting for populations in their community. It is generally started during the pregnancy, prenatally, the home visiting, and can last up to the child's age of 2 years. And during that time, they're implementing a specific home visiting model, and there are about five or six of them that we support. Within that model is the education component of what you're speaking to. So they might be doing parenting education, early childhood development education, play education, like how do you play and interact with your child. In addition to that, they make referrals and connections to all of those other services that you mentioned. And it might be within their same agency, it might be with a partner agency, but it's through those referrals and connections to resources that they're able to access mental health services, chemical health services, diapers, formula, car seats, other supplies that a parent might need. And the home visiting is typically for the mother, but there are models and programs that support the same type of services for fathers as well.
Thank you.
All right.
So it's
thank you, Representative Nadeau.
Five or six programs that the Department of Health funds across the state. Five or six agencies and
Maria Woodridge.
No, there's more than that. I don't have the exact number with me, but almost every county health board in Minnesota implements a home visiting program. And then there's probably about six nonprofits and then all but two of the tribes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
My next question has
Representative, I know you're new, but please go through the chair. Go ahead.
Sorry. My next question has to do with the eligibility component. There's probably a lot of people here that don't know. I actually do contracts for Hennepin County, and so I'm going to focus on the eligibility component in a second. But the first question that I want to ask has to do with lines 5.25 through 5.29. It's part of the privacy protection part of this legislation, and the upper parts in subdivision 3, sections 1, 2, 3 up through B are pretty typical. That there has to be consent, it's confidential unless it's authorized by the person to be shared. But what's non-typical is 3B, which is where the document provided to the person for the purpose of obtaining consent has to be separate from any other privacy document. That's really non-typical, and I'm wondering why in this particular thing we're requiring that consent be a separate document than any other in a more typical consents where they're aggregated in one document. Is there a reason for that?
Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. I think we heard pretty clearly from some of the testimony today that there have been some pretty bad abuses of the sharing of data, and so to have extra protections to make sure that we are putting that in the language here to make sure that we are protecting the privacy of individuals seeking services in these programs that have received these grant funds.
Okay, and final question, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe we should start looking at this for some of our vulnerable kids as well. Maybe that's a good model to follow. Back to line 2.15, it's basically eligibility for the grants. There's a pretty long list of eligible services. Can you identify any service in here that is not that's not already provided through the department?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. We've met in committee earlier today, so I'm working on his name. So one of the things that is talking about the services that we want to make sure that they have ability to access. We heard testimony today about uninsured pregnant people coming into the crisis pregnancy center. Well, we want to make sure that those folks have access to get into they're probably eligible for public health programs, right? Okay. And there's probably a way for them to get enrolled. So rather than accepting them being uninsured as the norm, let's talk about what do we need to do to make sure they get enrolled. And so we're making sure that referrals are happening, that people have access to get the services that would help beyond just that, you know, getting the diapers or the formula. And so I think the insurance is a great example, and that's why we have it on line 2.22.
All right, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Olson, I just maybe ask a question to clarify. So so this bill, it does not require CPCs to refer patients for abortion, right? Or like, it's just saying that if they do discuss abortions or pregnancies, that it be medically accurate. Is that correct?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr. Absolutely. That's exactly what we're saying, is that it's requiring, the requirement is that the information needs to be medically accurate. And then separate from that, the referral part is upon request, so that if a pregnant person were to ask for a referral, they could be given one.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Olson, that clarification is really important. I do just want to say really quick a personal statement here. I've heard lots of characterizations of this, of the work we're doing as bizarro and absurd, and there's great outrage over this, and mention of this language of what it's trying to do. But it's pretty clear that the current language, the way it is purposeful to exclude centers that actually provide alternatives to pregnancy and to allow information on abortion. And I guess I don't understand the outrage when expanding that, sure, everybody has that option. And I want to just say, I know we have a limited time, but I do want to state that I've spoken very publicly about this. I had an abortion, an ectopic pregnancy, and I had to have an abortion. And I ended up at a crisis pregnancy center who actually did an ultrasound and told me to continue with that pregnancy without having real medical advice. And so I was very confused because I had been told by my doctor that I could die with this condition. And so I was given untrue medical advice, and I ended up finally, because I wanted to continue to find answers, at an abortion clinic. And they didn't tell me to have an abortion. Actually, the counselor who was with me cried with me and was trying to find ways in which I could keep this pregnancy, even though it was an ectopic pregnancy, and she went through all the risks with me. And she actually said, I just don't know if I could have you go through this abortion today because of the emotion you're experiencing. It was really powerful to see the difference between the way I was treated in these facilities. And the abortion clinic did not just tell me I should have an abortion. They actually were very compassionate figuring out how I could move forward and trying to have this pregnancy, even though there was at great risk to me. But I ended up making the decision to have that abortion. And so I just want to be very clear that the services provided, medically accurate and giving me all the information to make the decision, made a difference in my life. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Olson, and ensuring that we get the broad spectrum of offers that we as women want to, or to those with uterus, more making decisions. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Herr. I have Representative Quam and then Keel, and then I think we can probably get to a vote. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we heard quite a bit of, I guess, maligning of certain entities and trying to paint doubt. Just for clarification, in earlier testimony and before this committee, no Planned Parenthood facilities are licensed medical facilities. So that, you know, you understand a more equal comparison. No preference one over the other. There are a lot of other policy and funding things we're hearing that already go or are aimed at one side of this issue. So it's disingenuous to say, well, we've got to change this one. This program, before and after, is helping mothers and children. When we had that baby formula shortage, a lot of young mothers were concerned. I know and have heard from some of those mothers and entities in my general area, the chair's general area, that helped find and supply baby formula to these mothers and children. That's what this existing program does. It helps the mothers before and after. It helps the children after. It helps families that are having a hard time and need support. That's what this program has been doing. We've got other programs that are supporting the availability, the right, the et cetera, for the alternative. But this program actually is helping those mothers and children. And, you know, frankly, instead of scrapping and make it more difficult for groups that are helping mothers and children, we should be looking at addressing bad actors. And there are bad actors in every group, every entity, every sector. So address the bad actors. Get a way to stop the ones that aren't telling the truth or are not doing the right work. But don't destroy something that has been helping so many. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Much appreciate you giving us license to ask questions. I'm a little confused. Representative Olson, I was trying to figure out who to ask, but I'm going to ask you. It was referred to that crisis pregnancy centers or don't have a license. So what abortion clinic has a license?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Thank you, Representative Keel. So what I would say is there's licensed medical providers, and that is a big difference between the CPCs and what we know to be true at, like we heard testimony today from licensed medical providers. And I think I saw in a study that many of the CPCs present as medical offices. Only 9% of Minnesota CPCs have claimed to have a physician, and 20% indicate they have a registered nurse. So that's very different than going into a place where you know that it's licensed medical providers providing that care in those centers.
Representative Keel, follow up.
Thank you. And I have another question after this, but Representative Olson, that's not true. How do we know that they don't have a doctor and or an RN on staff? And I actually happen to know and have worked with people, there is a doctor licensed, ultrasound technicians that are licensed, that do this these things for the different sections. I heard that we're given false information. I know that they connect to even our public health nurses have sent people to those crisis centers. So I'm concerned with what the information is, because there are doctors and nurses involved in licensing. And as you know, I have a problem with not licensing abortion centers because of the issues. And we hear stories all the time about Planned Parenthood that has somebody that is not qualified helping with an abortion. So I'm thinking we don't have the greatest of concerns anyway, something that we should be doing to make sure that everyone is being treated with the professionals that it needs to be. But I do know that in crisis centers, there are wonderful people that work hard at helping those that are in a stressful situation or just need help to be available. Sorry. Madam Chair, I have another question to ask.
Okay, I think Representative Olson wanted to respond first, and then you can ask one more question. Representative Olson.
Thanks, Chair Liebling, and thanks, Representative Keel. Well, I would say to follow up after your point there about if they have a licensed medical professional, they're providing medically accurate information, they would actually meet the criteria that the bill lays out to be eligible for the funding.
Representative Keel, final question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I have some concerns about that because I think it puts them in a real, in some of the language, I can't point it out right now, that does put these facilities in a concerning spot. They're expressing it to me. So my other question is, why do we need to relabel or add to all of the, excuse me while I get my glasses on page 2, we have all of these additional services that are required, even though we already offer all of this in Minnesota to pregnant women. I've never met a man that's pregnant, but I really want to do that. So anybody knows anybody that is male that is, pregnant? That's beside the point.
Science,
right. But I'm concerned why we're doing this again when in fact we have great Minnesota has great ways to provide services to people. I think sometimes the concern is that we're not getting that they're not aware of it or they're in a crisis and they don't know where to go. But I'm confused. Aren't we being redundant here? And anyway.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. And I'm Representative Keel, I'm not exactly sure what specific piece you have issue with that we'd be redundant about making sure someone can access healthcare programs, domestic violence services, mental health, adding to the list of things. This seems like very good services to be providing people who are pregnant.
Representative Keel. Oh, okay. I'm going to call on the next member. Representative Keel, I think we should move on. And so I'm going to call on Representative Smith, and then Mr. Harney has some concluding information for us, and then we're going to lay the bill over. I misspoke. We're not voting on it today, of course. So Representative Smith.
Yeah. So first off, I just want to say trans men are real. They live in Minnesota. They're wonderful, and they deserve all the rights to make their healthcare decisions, and they should not be catching flack in this committee this morning. Just wanted to say that they're wonderful, beautiful people. I also want to say that currently in Minnesota, we do not license medical clinics. That's across the board, not just in this very particular way. Hospitals and ambulatory surgical units are licensed, but not clinics. We protect the public by licensing the practitioners at clinics. That has been the case since we started doing that over 100 years ago. Thirdly, the term disingenuous was used, and I just want to point out that a lot of the objections I think that have been brought up on this committee are in fact disingenuous. This program is currently, until we pass this bill, the program is currently called Positive Abortion Alternatives Grant. It very specifically takes a stance on this issue. What we are doing is, and I'm glad other members of this committee are nervous about options, we make sure that all options are available through the providers who are offering the services in here. If you look through this bill, there's nothing that says current people who are providing things like formula that we've heard or diapers have to stop doing that. What they do have to do is be able to give medically accurate information, like Representative Olson has said very specifically. They have to have professionals look at things like ultrasounds. We're removing requirements from the current law as it is written. We're making this grant money more publicly available and make sure that money goes towards actually giving all of the options. That's all this is doing. We're not saying anyone can't do anything specific. We're making sure those options are available. So I just think there's a lot of disingenuous things said. Very happy to support this bill. Thank you, Representative Olson, for bringing it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Smith. I'm going to call on Mr. Harney to give us some information.
I'm
and support.
Chair Liebling, Representative Schumacher had a question about the base for the current law program. That general fund appropriation is approximately $3.4 million annually. The testifier, 3.4, correct. The testifier from MDH mentioned the family home visiting program that they operate, and for the committee's edification, the general fund base for that program is $20.1 million in 24 and approximately $18 million in 25.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Harney. And all right. With that, we are going to lay over House File 289 for possible inclusion in a future committee bill. And thank you, Representative Olson, and thank you to all of the testifiers for being here today. Next on our agenda is House File 279, Representative Herr. And Representative Herr, since she is on the committee, it is her motion that House File 279 be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Herr, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my bill will be a lot easier and simpler. This bill is actually just a technical bill for dentistry. And just to go over the changes really quick, that it just changes one word from assisting to assistant, and then there is actually also a email or mailer list that gets compiled that will actually now be charged a $5 fee, which is consistent with the other boards in what they do when they compile lists and get those lists to the individuals requesting it. And just to, in case people have questions why there are these mailers, this data that is being put together is already public information. And the people requesting it usually is like dental professional licensees for recruitment to fill positions or for furthering education. So that is the gist of this bill, Madam Chair. And with that, I'd be I'm willing to answer any questions people may have about it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Herr. Was there someone who was going to testify on the bill or?
There was, Madam Chair, and the testifier unfortunately could not make it this morning.
Okay.
But I can answer any technical questions.
All right. Thank you, Representative Herr. And just so for members to note, there is a fiscal note in our packets that is basically no fiscal note. It's a zero. And so any questions or discussion? Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, looking at 4.3 and 4.4, I don't see why that should be there. It's like you go to a restaurant and we're going to charge you for the plate, for the silverware. You've already, as stated, have a copy, public data of a mailing list. So someone calls in and says, can you send that to me? Obviously, they can send it through the email because they're asking for an email list. The few moments that it takes to do click, type in their email address and send, plus, you know, reading the rest of this, they already would have had the email address because it would be part of the list. I think that we pay taxes. These people working in this area pay money in, and they ought to be able to get public information without paying for the couple of minutes that it takes an employee to do it. That's the only thing that I see in this that, you know, burns me a little bit. Almost $18 billion, and now we're looking how at a nickel and dime on something like this. So I would hope that you could take that out, and, you know, before it passes. I'm sorry I didn't submit the very simple amendment to delete 4.3.4.4. Thank you.
Representative Herr, do you want to discuss a little more about why the board wants that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and Representative Kwan for that question. So the list doesn't already exist. So it's the information itself is public. So the person who's receiving the request would still have to actually compile the list and then get that list to the individual requesting it. So there is work involved in that, and it is a small fee. I would just say that I worked in government in the mayor's office for 4 years, and every time there is a request, employees already have. There's not somebody who's usually employed just to do this. They actually have to not do their regular job to complete requests for people, and it was always public information. And so this is a much simpler request, but there is a cost to that time, and so a $5 fee is actually very minimal, and it's for individuals who are trying to get people who are licensed either further education or just access because they want to hire them. It might be looking, so like they're going to get a benefit from this and someone's doing the work. So it's a really small fee for that. But the list doesn't already exist, Representative Quam.
Madam Chair.
Representative Quam.
I am shocked and amazed that an entity that oversees this group doesn't have a mailing list. That would be ineptitude not to have that generated. And the first time somebody asked for it, it's generated. And when you add people to your group, you're adding there, because I'm sure there are bulletins and other information that have to be sent out. So I think, I'm sorry, but I don't accept the fact that you're saying, oh, they have to, every time somebody asks, they have to make it from scratch. That would be inefficient than... I thought our government was more efficient than that.
Yeah, Representative Hurwitz, it is really unfortunate that the testifier isn't here from the board, but maybe one of House Research knows, do the other health licensing boards do this already? I thought that was kind of part of the justification that the others already are doing it.
Chair Liebling, the other licensing boards do this similar thing in the $5 based on what other boards are doing. And I would welcome Representative Quam to visit with government entities. Everybody stores data differently, and how they pull data is done differently. And I wish there was a magic way for us to just have lists sitting around and be able to give it to people. But, you know, the way we keep data in databases, it does have to get extracted. And there are requirements for how long you keep lists, and then when lists change and they get updated, and so there's just not lists lying around, Madam Chair. And so, this is very common practice within all of the boards.
Yeah, I would just also thank you, Representative Hur. I just also would like to make sure that members because we haven't really had the overviews and the background on this, that we have this thing called the Special Revenue Fund. And and it's designated SGSR, and you'll hear that acronym a lot. And the health licensing boards that are under our jurisdiction charge their licensees fees. Those fees go into this fund, and then this committee appropriates those fees to them for use in their licensing activities. So if I'm misstating any of that, Mr. Harney can help me, but... So just to be really clear, this is separate when we're talking about the budget surplus and all that. This is really entirely separate from that, and it's ongoing, and this is, I suppose it would be possible for us to take some of the general fund and let these boards use it. I guess that would always be possible, but the practice for many, many years has been they're sort of self-funded in this way, and that's why they come to us and they have to come to us to increase their fees and all of that. Mr. Harney, anything on that?
I would just add, Chair Liebling, that generally if the fiscal note hypothetically had a material amount reported, the committee would have to appropriate that amount to the board in order for the board to access it. But since that amount is immaterial as reported on the fiscal note, that's unnecessary at this time.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to apologize for assuming that the government worked like the real world and had regular ways of doing it. And if it's immaterial, then why are we adding an immaterial thing, to each person that calls and asks for it? So I'm sorry, it's my personal weakness.
All right,
showing.
All right, well, thank you, Representative Quam. And I don't think Mr. Harney was expressing an opinion on that. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hur, this might have been a question that was more suited to your testifier, so I apologize in advance. I'm thinking about the types of list requests that they may be receiving, and I'm assuming that they wouldn't be just a generic list of all people in any particular category. that people may be coming in and saying, we want a list for people in a certain region, we want a list for people with certain level of experience or expertise, and that there's selection involved in giving the proper list. Is that an accurate assumption? Because that does involve effort, and it's not something that can be efficiently made available in advance. Thank you.
Representative Herr?
Chair Liebling and Representative Rye, thank you for that question and that comment. Actually, my testifier would have been really good to answer that. I did not dive into that, but there are different reasons why lists are requested, so it would not always just be the exact same list being generated every time, but I don't know the specific details of that. But that is something I can definitely follow up and get back to the committee.
All right, thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr. So just for clarification, I have been in the IT industry for 20-plus years. I just want to tell you that there's, depending on the number of individuals or professionals in any given field, there's a great deal of list maintenance that goes on when folks leave or enter, get licensed, they retire, things happen. So there's a lot of things that go on that, and the value of a list when someone asks for it is to somewhat what Representative Ryer asked, is very specific information about a geographical region. And the value of that list is making sure that that list is up to date and accurate. And those things are changing constantly on a day-to-day basis. So simply having a stock list sitting around wouldn't be of the greatest value to someone. And I would argue that $5 is more than reasonable to any business who wants to use this information to have accurate, good information. Not having to weed through a list and sift out the folks who have, may have retired, or not get access to the folks who've actually put their license through in the last month or 2 months or whenever the list was last updated. It makes the most sense to do this on a case-by-case basis so that we're giving people accurate information. And in all honesty, $5 is not an unreasonable amount to ask for this, but it is standard practice to actually be conscious of your data and providing accurate data. And I think that's the real value here. So I just want to say, from an industry standard, that is pretty standard practice. So I think this is more than reasonable, and $5 is well worth the value that anyone would receive from this particular item. So thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing the bill forward.
Representative Herr, any final word on the bill before we vote?
Just quickly, I didn't realize this technical bill would generate so much conversation, and especially something that is following on general practices. But I just want to remind this committee that you all passed a technical bill for the dentistry board last year, and this was just happened to be an omission from that, would have been included in what was already passed. And so I appreciate the committee's support to just get this technical piece through. And I think, just to respond quickly to Representative Quam and his criticism of the private sector and hoping that somehow wishing that they would operate like everyone else does, but I want to be very clear, I did spend 15 years in the private sector, and when you ask for a list from them, it cost a lot more. So I just want to say that this is $5 is reasonable, and I appreciate this committee's support of this bill.
All right. With that, Representative Herr is going to renew her motion that House File 279 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Herr. And with that, we will reconvene on Tuesday. We will post the agenda, and we stand adjourned.